Brigadier Daniel Reel 2, you were telling me about the Tiger Shoot, and you'd just become aware.
I'd like to tell you my age. I was about 20.
So this is 1921, and you'd just become aware of the tiger below you.
An animal of some sort was underneath my rhododendron bush. I could smell it, and I could feel the heat of it. It never struck me for one moment that it was a tiger, or why a tiger should come down the path and sit under me. I heard a shuffling, and I very, very carefully looked behind me, and there was there on the bank above me was a very large tiger at a distance of 6 feet. I had never seen a tiger before. I'd never been so close to a carnivora of any description, and I realized that if I moved half an inch, he would realize that it was indeed what he had seen the villagers doing, putting up a charn, M-A-C-H-A-N, and that there's an Englishman, or there was an Englishman sitting in it. But he could not make me out. We looked at each other.
Could he have got to you?
Of course he could, Joe. They were 6 feet away. Now you can jump 19 feet.
So, but the bush wasn't thick enough to keep him back.
We couldn't be quite sure. He walked down behind me, not more than 4 feet from me, sat down underneath me for about half an hour, and then slowly, I didn't hear him, but he must have walked down the path, and he went away, and he never came near the half-eaten girl who remained untouched
and you could
field in front of me.
And you couldn't get your rifle round?
I couldn't move anything. If I had, I'd have been killed.
You didn't have time?
No, but I couldn't get my rifle out before he would have torn me out of the bush and eaten me. Now, the Mandala tiger was well known. He had killed and eaten 23 people. The one thing he disliked very much was being hunted. Well, now, I wasn't alone in that, because I also had never been hunted before, and I disliked it too. With the result that I invited the headman of the village, which was very small, only 3 huts, to bring his family and come and camp on the veranda of my little bungalow there where I was staying, forest bungalow, and I told him I would produce food for them if they would care to stay there as long as I stayed there, and gave me a certain amount of comfort. Now, it happened that the rarest antelopes in the world, of which there were not more than 20 left, a couple were in the vicinity of where I was camping. And the next day, I did not go out shooting as I had. I was frightened. But the day after I did, to my astonishment, as I was in the very thickest of the thick nullah, I turned around, and there in front of me were a pair of the rarest gazelles in the world, two serow. Now, serow, both male and female, have horns. And I was trying to distinguish which was the male, because I didn't want to shoot the female as they were so rare. And they turned and disappeared. got back to my bungalow and was very glad to hear that my cousin was on his way with two companies of Gurkhas, and they were passing me the next day and were going to take me on with them, and they were going up into Tibet, where my cousin had to attend a large fair that took place once every 5 years. What he didn't tell me was that the Gurkhas, they march at 4.5 miles an hour, carrying a pack of 40 pounds, and think nothing of it. The foothills of the Himalayas are in, like waves. You go up 1,000 feet and down 1,000 feet, up 2,000 feet and down 2,000 feet. This was more than I, who had just arrived in India, could stand. So they got me a pony, and I tied myself to its tail, and it pulled me up the hills, and it was great company for me. The other thing my cousin did not tell me was that there were several ravines on the way to Tibet. Now, the method of crossing the ravines, which were 600 feet to 400 feet deep, was on a rope bridge. The Gurkhas walked straight across these rope bridges. There was one rope on each side, put your hand on if you wanted to steady yourself, and one rope for you to put your feet on, and they walked across those as if they were walking across Westminster Bridge and took no notice of them at all. The very sight of them scared me to desperation. I had to cross, and I buried my face in the back of my cousin, and I hung on to him, and I must have passed out at least halfway over, but I got across these appalling rope bridges without falling in or dragging him in after me. They are very, very dangerous. One man who loses his head and starts to tremble will kill every man who is on the rope behind him, and they will all be thrown off to the bottom of the ravine. Well, we got to Tibet. On the way, I shot some rather rare antelopes of sorts called tar, and I lay on the edge of the precipice, and the tar was immediately below me on a ledge. And as I fired, my Gurkha companion, soldier, leapt to his feet, dashed to the edge of the precipice to see if I had killed the tar. I had killed it. It had dropped down 200 or 300 feet, and I very, very nearly followed it. I shot no more. Under those circumstances, it was far too dangerous, because the exuberance of the Gurkhas and their pleasure at getting fresh meat. I spent a week in the large Tibet village, which was beyond my imagination. We went back to the times of Noah and the Ark. There was no such thing as sanitation of any sort, and all the local inhabitants seemed to live on rancid butter and tea. but the country was beautiful beyond words. The valleys were full of fruit trees, all in full flower, and always behind you was this massive Himalayas of shining ice. I could not stand the smell of the Tibetans much longer. My cousin had to stay another fortnight. And one Tibetan who was very anxious to give me I'll remember it later on, leave it here. Pack animal, which they used for traveling, and they carried all the blankets and cooking utensils on the back of this animal. Now, the animal went willingly with his master, but he always went to where he wished to go first. For instance, if you were in London and you wished to go to Hampstead Heath, he would probably insist on going to Newcastle first. And that was somewhat difficult when you were trying to hunt a snow leopard, which I was trying to hunt. When I told my cousin that I was going up with this man to shoot a snow leopard, he said, "You certainly are not. All that will happen is that the Tibetan who will cut your throat, and the only thing he wants are your boots." So he sent me back with the first relief of his men, and they relieved each other at the beginning of Pindri Pass. And again, there was one of these terrible bridges to be crossed over a very large nullah, but I had no cousin for my head to be buried in. And I said to the warrant officer by signs, there was nothing on this earth that would induce me to cross that rope under any circumstances whatsoever, and we would descend to the bottom of the ravine and mount up again the other side. He said it would take 3 days to go down and 3 days to go up the other side. I said, "I don't care if it takes 3 years, but I will not and cannot cross the bridge." So I went down and up the other side. I then finally returned to my cousin's cantonment with the relieving company of Gurkhas, and found his wife surprised to see me and not at all pleased.
Now, did you ever get the tiger? You didn't shoot that tiger, did you? That one got away.
Walked away.
And what was the name? Did it have a name? Because sometimes they were
well known. Well known. Manaula.
It was called
Manaula. It had eaten and killed 23 people up to date. Now, it was killed by a forest officer who was on his rounds looking at the forests. A man from the village ran out to him and said, "Saab, come quickly into this hut. The Manaula is back and he's eating a boy on the road at a range of about 50 yards. The forest officer, with the greatest of these, killed the Manaula man-eater. And on his examination as to why he was a man-eater, he found he had porcupine quills in his jaw, and therefore he could not chew the meat that he killed. And he got thinner and thinner, and he took to eating the easiest of all game in the world, human beings.
Now, when did you shoot your tiger then?
Oh. About 4 years' time. Every hot weather I went and took a forest. But I had omitted to talk to a single relation of mine.
You mentioned that, yes.
I did not know what India was like. I did not know that there was only one thing that every Indian thinks of, and that is money. I never took money with me. I never thought of giving the shikari 50 rupees and the headman 100 rupees. If I had, I would have got as many tiger as I wanted to. Every forest that I hunted in, I held tigers. And they walked past me, and there was a native up in a tree, and he just tapped away with a piece of wood as the tiger was approaching me, and it went off to its left or the right and never came near me, and I never saw it.
So how did you eventually get one then?
Shooting tiger on foot is the most dangerous form of big game shooting that anybody can do and is never indulged in except by the most ignorant and foolish of men, and is nearly always fatal. Some years later, I was down in the south of India, and there was a fig tree full of figs, and this was full moon, and a track ran up beside it. I said to my old huntsman, I'm going to sit in this tree tonight and see if I can see anything going along the path. He very wisely produced a bout of fever, refused to accompany me that night, and sent his son in his place. His son was a cowardly native. Why should he not be? I sat up the tree and I dozed, and the son went to sleep, and I went to sleep. And I suddenly realized that this very large tree that I was in was one solid mass of sloth bear eating the fruit. I shouted, and about 20 leapt out of the tree, frightened the wits out of me, and they ran away. And of course, being full moon, it was pitch dark in the tree, and I couldn't see one. I didn't even have the pleasure of shooting one. I went back and went back to sleep. And the native then woke me up and said, Psalm Shirahai, which is the tiger, is here. And I said, where is it? Oh, he said, it's gone now. It's been sitting on the path about 20 yards away. I felt like shooting him, but I didn't. But curiously enough, I was woken by the voice of his father, who was in his own house, in his own hut, 3 miles away. And it was his thoughts that woke me up. And his son, of course, had said nothing because he did not want the Saab to shoot the tiger in case he didn't kill it, in which case the tiger would have killed one of them. Well, the dawn broke, a samba, which is a very big deer, the biggest deer in India. And when they are disturbed or frightened, they make the sound of a bell. And I heard it belling, and I knew it had seen the tiger quite close, within half a mile. So I got out of the tree very quietly and walked along the path, which was all deep sand and absolutely noiseless. Dawn was just breaking, and I realized that what I saw moving in front of me was the tail of a tiger. It was only about 40 yards away, and it was swinging from side to side as the tiger walked away. They had no idea that I was there. I realized that my one and only chance of killing a tiger had come. And I shot it straight through the anus. And that was my one and only tiger I got in India.
It's very interesting. What would you take trophies? I mean, not just a tiger. I mean,
you have its skin. Expert skinners in the jungle, the jungle men are. Then you send it down by runner to Mysore, where they cure the skin and cure the head. And the head is set up with the skin, and there is your tiger that you put on the wall of wherever you live. And you look at that tiger and you say very much to yourself, I will never, never try and shoot a tiger on foot again.
Have you still got it? Or has it gone there?
It's gone there. Now, I know all that is absolute. I wouldn't publish a word on it, but you asked for it and you got it.
Very interesting. Now, just going back quicker again then into the story. You were with this unit, you weren't getting on very well. You spent most of your time hunting. How long were you attached to them?
Oh, with my battery. I was with the battery all through my 9 years in India, nominally.
You didn't get on well with your unit, but did you enjoy your time in India? It sounds like you enjoyed it.
I had 600 horses to look after until the regiment came back from Iraq, which was 2 months, and which I thoroughly enjoyed. And I had about 400 native drivers.
Did you do any horse racing or racing at all in India?
I went to Gujarat. You know how to spell to Gujarat. The neighboring, station had asked me the evening for me as I was all alone there. And I was given a pony to mount on in Gujarat, and I was told that they were going to do pig sticking hunt. I knew nothing about pig sticking. I was given a spear with a very heavy weight on one end and a very sharp point on the other, and told that as soon as the biggest boar was seen, and I was given the signal, everyone went as fast as the horses could carry them after the big boar. My horse happened to be very fast and was a long way ahead of the others, so I plunged my spear into the boar, which then dashed at my pony, knocked the pony's legs away and threw me to the ground, and I passed out. A But when I came to, I found the pig was dead, and there were his patches, and I won the Gujarat Cup without knowing what I was doing at all. That was the only thing I won in India. When I could have won so many other things.
What was
I was obsessed with this big game shooting. I shot a lot of leopards.
Were they dangerous to hunt?
Leopards are the most dangerous animals in the world.
Even more than the tiger?
Oh, far more. And what? Do you know why? Because a leopard never cleans his claws. And his claws are always full of decaying meat. And if you are mauled by a leopard, you will get gangrene for an absolute certainty. And a man came, was brought into my camp on a stretcher at one of my periods when I was hunting, and his arm was the size of a man's size, and my bearer, my servant, said to me, or the cook, I'll go get axe, and you go chop, chop, and we cut his arm off, and he lived.
You cut it?
Yes, and I said to him, I do not go chop chop, I do not cut the arms off, give me a knife, and he gave me a razor blade, and I slit the arm 7 times, and the smell was so appalling, I had to move my camp. I sent him off in a bullock cart. He had 6 days in a bullock cart going at 2 miles an hour to reach the railway. One train per week had left the day before. He spent a week at the railway side, little halt. For the next week, got onto the little small line train and was taken to Secunderabad, where he was operated on, his arm was removed, and he was perfectly got perfectly well, and he wrote me a very nice letter of thanks.